Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right. Wake up, everybody. You are listening to MPH Radio. As the voice for MPH Radio, we'd like to welcome you to another program of Missing Pages of History. Yes, the world cannot get better. We got to change it. That's right. We got to change it. In order to change it, we need a tool and a vehicle to do that. And today we're going to be using this radio program to help make a contribution, to make a contribution to moving humanity forward. Today is Saturday, April 11, 2020. And we have a special guest today. We'll be featuring our beloved sister Gail Walker, talking about IFCO, Cuba, and what we can learn from this institution called IFCO, Pass for Peace, through the understanding of our sister Gail Walker. But before we bring Gail on, like always, as we represent underserved communities, we'd like to just share with you briefly the order of the agenda for today, which we'll follow. We're going to give you something to think about as we talk about this concept of what is freedom, followed by some Black Men Facts with our contributor and member Susie, and then we'll feature our major guest today, which will be Sister Gail Walker. And like always, we'll close out on the note of how you can help and support MPH. So stay back, get back, relax, tune in, get your pens and pencils. And right now, what I'm going to do at this point in time, we're going to talk about just a little bit about this question of, give me something to think about. What is freedom? When we come talk about this concept of freedom, it's something that many people talk about, many people have fought over, and the world today is still trying to define what it is. We'd like to just give you something to think about from three individuals who gave their conception of freedom. The First one from Jeffrey Borstein. He defined freedom as, freedom is that instant between when someone tells you to do something and when you decide how to respond. That's interesting. Freedom is that instant between when someone tells you to do something and when you decide how to respond. Could we apply that today, given all of the conditions and contradictions that are going on today? How would that apply to your understanding of freedom? Let's move to the second concept of freedom, which was given by Malcolm X. Brother Malcolm stated, if you're not ready to die for it, put the word freedom out of your vocabulary. Let me repeat that. Brother Malcolm stated, or he conceived freedom as something that if you are not ready to die for it, put the word freedom out of your vocabulary. That's the word, that's the definition of freedom for Brother Malcolm. How does that apply to your understanding, your world of freedom? And last but not least for today, author Matimu Ether. He stated, freedom is the emancipation from the arbitrary rule of other men. Let me repeat that. Freedom is the emancipation from the arbitrary rule of other men. Right now, we see decisions are being made as it relates to what's going on with this epidemic. And there are many questions in terms of who are the people who are making this decision. So maybe does this definition of freedom have some relevance to your life today? Those were three concepts of freedom today. We just wanted to give you something to think about. And what we're going to do right now when we come back, get your pens and pencils out, because we're going to have Susan, who is a contributor, and she's a contributor and supporter of MPH. She's going to give you some black mini facts. We're going to pause for the station break, and when we come back, we're going to share with you some black mini facts. You got to listen to the voice of missing pages of history. We'll be right back.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed. Brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Fast eyes burst into rhythm. Where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked. Climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. This is the voice of MPH Radio. Right now, we're going to take you back. We're going to take you back to history. History in terms of some of the contributions that Africans in America have made to this world. So right now, the theme today is on making the tech world. That's the world we live in today. Susie will share some black mini facts on people who have made contribution in the tech world of today. So right now, we'd like to welcome Susan to MPH. And Susan, the mic is now yours.
Good evening. I'd like to give Black Mini Facts on three individuals. That's Philip M. Wally, Valerie Thomas, and Alice H. Parker. The African scientists / inventors presented today have made items and products that currently make the world run more efficiently and to make us more comfortable. In most cases, these inventions have served to connect people faster and help transform the world as we know it today. A better place because of such scientists and inventors. And the first one is Philip M. Wally. M. Wally is an engineer, geologist, computer scientist who developed a formula that allows large number of computers to communicate with one another at the same time. He discovered he could use thousands of microprocessors instead of several supercomputers to perform computations. Through research, he found a machine called the Connection Machine at the Los Alamos National Lab that was designed to operate over 60,000 interconnected processors. In 1987, he was given permission to use the machine and develop a program that was able to perform 3.1 billion calculations per second, the fastest in the world. He now had an inexpensive and practical method for computers to talk to each other all over the world. Since then, he has won over 100 awards for his work, and Apple Computer uses his technology for its fourth generation computers. Next, we have Valerie Thomas. Thomas was a scientist and inventor, worked for NASA from 1964 to 1995 in various capacities. While there, she developed real-time computer data systems as well as managing various projects, including image processing systems. Her department spearheaded the development of the first satellite to send images from outer space. In 1980, she received a patent for an illusion transmitter, which she had been working on for 3 years. The illusion transmitter gives an optical illusion of a three-dimensional 3D image that looks real on the receiving end. This tech has been utilized in television and movie industry. Thomas is considered one of the most prominent Black inventors of the 20th century. And the last one for today is Alice H. Parker. Parker developed an early concept of the modern home heating system fueled by natural gas. She was given a patent in December 1919 for her design featuring zone heating using natural gas instead of wood or coal, conserved energy. It was very similar to current systems. Her design was a result of her feeling that her fireplace in the cold climate of New Jersey was not warming her home effectively. Her initial designs were not used, but her concept that natural gas and ductwork could be used was groundbreaking. Her receipt of a patent as a Black woman during that time was extremely unusual and an outstanding achievement. And we'd like to reference their source, which is Black Seed, Inc., and it's from their calendar 2017, in which this was copyrighted in 2020. And there you have three mini facts for Saturday, April 11, 2020.
We'd like to thank you, Susie, for your many facts today. And to our listening audience, we'd like to remind you that we are a historical people and we make history on a daily basis. Those are three individuals who have made history through the contribution of the tech world today. And you can be an example by looking at the history and the contribution that they have made. And we know if one have done it, we all can do it. So we'd like to thank you again, Susie, for your contribution today in the area of the Black Mini Facts. What we're doing right now, we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, We're going to deal with our feature guest today, which will be Sister Gail Walker, and we're going to talk about the impact of the organization that she represents, IFCO, Pastors for Peace, and their relationship and work with Cuba and to Cuba. So that's coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're going to take a station break. You'll listen to Missing Pages of History. Back to MPH. You listen to the voice of Missing Pages of History. Yes, we're going to teach the children. We're going to teach the youth. And one of the things we're going to do today is we're going to teach the youth about the importance of who is Sister Gail Walker, IFCO, Pastors for Peace in Cuba. What can we learn? That's a future theme for today's program. And one thing is about Missing Pages of History. We seek to play a role of filling in our missing pages of history. And this is a page that must be in our historical books of the life and the works of Sister Gail Walker, the organization of IFCO, Pastors for Peace, and the beautiful work of Cuba and its people. So right now, let's teach the world Sister Gail, of what's going on today in terms of, number one, why don't you first introduce yourself, who is Gail Walker?
Thank you so much, Brother Lee and Sister Susie. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all this afternoon. My name is Gail Walker, and I am the Executive Director of IFCO. And IFCO stands for the Interreligious Foundation for Community Organization. And we have been an organization that has been in existence for more than 50 years, generally really working and to fight injustice, to fight for the rights of the poor, the disenfranchised, proudly an organization that has been led by people of color since 1967. And my father, Reverend Lucius Walker, was our founding director. But I have been in this seat now for the last 9 years after his passing. And we continue the work, that legacy, the importance of really standing up for social justice in a variety of different arenas. And that's been the long-term, you know, history of the organization, and one that we continue to embrace and move forward to this day.
Okay, Sister Gail, I know earlier you spoke a little bit about your organization. Can you give our organization a sense of some of the programs, activities, and accomplishments that y'all have made during the past 50 years or so of your existence? And how have they played a key, how have they made an impact on our underserved communities?
Yes, yes, thank you. Yeah, it's been really varied, Lee, you know, the kind of work that we have engaged in from the born in 67 by, you know, progressive activists and clergy with the idea of trying to identify ways that we as a community, a global community, can stand up and support those who have been really like, as you mentioned, you know, disenfranchised, have been, you know, left out, shut out, and doing that through community organizing. In the 1970s, we did work to support different African liberation struggles. I should just back up and say that the work that we've done has been on both the domestic and the international front. So internationally, did support of different African liberation struggles in the 1970s. Of course, you know, supporting our brothers and sisters in Angola, the fight against apartheid, et cetera. In its earliest form of climate justice work, IFCO was engaged in educating people about the devastating drought in the Western Sahel, you know, impacting tens of thousands of people. On the national front, we did work, you know, fighting the violence of the Ku Klux Klan, working with the Native American community, the American Indian movement, farm labor organizers, doing training, organizing a training institute under the name of the freedom fighter, Amical Cabral. Those are just some of the things that we had done in those earlier years. And in the 80s, began doing a lot of work in the Caribbean and Central America. Really, that was part of parcel where our signature project, Pastors for Peace, was born. When we were taking a delegation, my father and I led a delegation back in 1988 to Nicaragua. Nicaragua, at a time when Ronald Reagan was in the White House, calling the Contra forces, the counter-revolutionary forces, the freedom fighters, and calling the Sandinistas, who were standing side by side with the Nicaraguan people, the terrorists. And we learned firsthand that it was the exact opposite when Contra forces attacked a passenger ferry that our delegation we were leading was traveling on. Father was wounded and conceived of the idea of organizing caravans of humanitarian aid organized by people in the United States to not only deliver symbolic aid, but more importantly, to educate people about the U.S. foreign policy in the region at that time. And we've been organizing caravans in that part of the world and in the Caribbean ever since, including Cuba. So as you can imagine, 50 years, I could go on and on, but it's been a rich and varied history that has really been focused on supporting the rights of people, pushing back against injustice, and supporting human and civil rights and on the international and local front.
You know, Sister Gail, many times we look at organizations and we look at this question of leadership. Most times you always see males in the forefront leading organizations and movement. But in terms of this Cuba solidarity movement that's taking place inside the U.S., and looking at your role now being the executive director of this organization, IFCO, Pathways for Peace, what experiences have you learned from your father, and how has this role of being a woman in the leadership role of a major organization, how has that experience sort of impact you on how you see things now versus before not holding that position?
Well, thank you. Thank you for that question. I think it's important to note that, you know, there are so many really positive and powerful sisters that are holding it down in a variety of different ways. And I'm not necessarily unique. I mean, I'm honored to be able to be in this position. But there are women who are out there on the front lines really doing the important work of educating and organizing on a variety of different fronts, and I certainly have, you know, I stand on the shoulders of giants, women giants. When I you know, think about the response to that question. But in terms of my father, you know, I guess I would say that my connection to IFCO, you know, is one that came with birth. You know, from the time that I was a little girl, he was a community activist, organizer, pastor, social worker, educator, and he was always, you know, on the front lines in the fight against injustice. And so that was something I grew up with, seeing that and being exposed to that. And then, of course, IFCO, he began and founded IFCO along with others when I was about 8 years old. So I have always known of IFCO, known of that history and the work of the organization. And when he passed away in 2010, decided that, you know, I felt that, you know, I knew the work and felt that there was still a lot that IFCO could bring to the table, and decided to step in and apply for the position, and have been doing that for the last 9 years, hard to believe. But the what I've learned is, I think, by you know, having had that exposure, what it means to stand up and speak truth to power, and what it means to really try to work within our collective community to identify, you know, the people who have different kinds of resources that they can help bring to the table as we fight this, you know, fight injustice on these various fronts. So I think just being able to work with a variety of different kinds of folks and trying to, you know, be a part of the collective. As I watched him, I'm very conscious of what he did, and want to continue to bring that kind of work to the table. And I'll just say, if I can, real quickly, again, mentioning women, you know, there are sisters like certainly historic figures. I always want to point to Fannie Lou Hamer. Not that I'm a Fannie Lou Hamer, but I think that her, you know, her courage and her tenacity, and I mean, I'm just, you know, just as one example, current example, Sister Rosemary Neely, who some of your listeners may know, is, you know, a mentor of mine. So I think also being able to, you know, reach back and recognize the support and that women have brought to this overall struggle for justice is important as well.
Okay. Sister Gail, one of the things we recognize for those who are aware of your organization IFCO Pastor of Peace, is that for youth inside of this country, the U.S., who has aspirations of maybe becoming a doctor of some sort, your organization is playing a major role of being a vehicle of making that reality to come true for these youth. Talk about this whole question of the program that is being facilitated and coordinated and organized by pastors as relates to this medical scholarship program where they can receive to go to Cuba and be trained to become a medical doctor. Just talk to the people something about their program and how can those who may have an interest want to participate.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you for any opportunity to talk about that program. The Latin America School of Medicine, which is based in Cuba, has a scholarship program, a vision that was brought forward by the Comandante Fidel Castro, who really saw the importance of being able to train young people in various parts of the world under a full scholarship, with the understanding that the only thing they needed to do to pay back that offer was to return home to their respective communities and serve the underserved. And he conceived of this back in the late 1990s, but since 2000, IFCO, in part because of its work, primarily because of its work in solidarity with Cuba since 1992. We've been organizing caravans of humanitarian aid and to Cuba under the name of the U.S.-Cuba Friendshipment Caravan. We've been organizing delegations, bringing people to Cuba to see the Cuban reality for itself. We've been fighting against the blockade in various ways since the early 90s. And as a result of that work, there was confidence that our Cuban friends had in IFCO and its ability to facilitate this project to assist young people in the United States who want to become physicians. When no one else stood up, when Brother Fidel Castro came to New York to the historic Riverside Church and announced this opportunity, there was no one who stood up to say that they would do this work. And my father said, well, we'll do it. Many of us working at IFCO said, wow, we're not sure how that's going to happen. But, you know, we, being the good foot soldiers, said we would move along and do the work. And since 2000, we have been the sole entity in the United States to facilitate this process for young people, primarily young Black and brown young people who are interested in becoming doctors to go to medical school, trained as only Cuba can train, given its premier medical system, people to become physicians with the understanding that they'll serve at home in underserved communities. And what a great opportunity for these young people to become trained as Cuban trained physicians, but also to learn Spanish and to be able to come back and serve with no debt whatsoever, because they've gotten this tremendous gift that's been offered by Cuba and the Cuban people. So it's a wonderful opportunity to serve in this role. There are now currently close to 200 graduates of the program who are working in cities and rural communities across the United States. Providing tremendous care, including being on the front lines in many cases in the fight against COVID-19 currently ravaging the world. So it's a great project, and we want to certainly encourage anybody who's interested in pursuing this opportunity to reach out to us so we can talk about what the requirements are and encourage people to consider going to Cuba to go to med school under full scholarship.
Okay, you listen to MPH Radio. You listen to Voice of MPH. What we're going to do right now, we will continue the discussion with Gail Walker as relates to her organization, IFCO Pastor of Peace, and we're going to talk a little bit about Cuba and what we can learn from Cuba. We're going to do this right after you come back from the station break. You're going to listen to MPH Radio. We are on the front line.
Blockaded. And we say blockade as opposed to embargo because an embargo is a unilateral policy. If I have a beef with you, Lee, that's between you and I, that's an embargo, perhaps. If I'm the mighty United States and I've got a problem with you and I want to, you know, suspend trade and with you, that's unilateral, that's an embargo. But if I'm putting pressure as the United States government on various other countries, imposing, you know, my will on them to also suspend trade and relationships with the country, then that's a blockade, and that's why we refer to this policy of more than six decades of trying to prevent other countries from trading with Cuba, from sending goods that are there that may have a portion of the materials that that they might sell, but that have been manufactured in the United States. So if Germany sells a particular type of a medical equipment, but a portion of that equipment has been manufactured in the U.S. through, various policies the U.S. government has imposed pressure on, that country, in this case, Germany, to suspend its relationship with Cuba. This blockade, we feel, is genocidal, is immoral, is illegal, is it's something that year after year the United Nations, General Assembly have voted to condemn. The United States has been isolated in its policy toward Cuba. There are 193 nations within the General Assembly of the United Nations. And the vast majority, year after year, have condemned this blockade, with only the United States, with the support of maybe Israel and perhaps one other country that they have been able to bully into voting with them, have stood alone. So it's an immoral, unjust policy, and that's why we continue to do this work. I just want to reference, in your first definition of freedom, I think you said something to the effect when someone tells you to do something and you determine, how to implement it. I'm paraphrasing.
Correct.
But,
yeah.
That this is what we feel is freedom. Our freedom is the ability to say the U.S. government's policy toward Cuba, I don't care if it's a law, it's an immoral law, it's an unjust law. And so it's one that we continue to push back and fight back and have been doing. Since we've been doing Cuba solidarity work in the early 1990s, and continue to do to this day, but that's really the crux of it, and what's been behind our continued work to educate people about the blockade, but also try to work to do what we can to lift it and in support of our Cuban family that is suffering so greatly as a result.
And Gil, one of the things I think you can help us to do this in terms of lifting blockade is speak to the listening world about what is Cuba, what is the beauty that Cuba has in terms of this question of assisting human beings, in terms of recognizing that when you look at nature, in terms of learning, in terms of just having compassion for other human beings. What is it about Cuba that makes it beautiful in that aspect? Because the narrative in this country, many people run from the word Cuba, particularly people from underserved communities, African people, oppressed people in this place. They have been miseducated about Cuba and its society. Can you talk a little bit about what is Cuba and the beauty about Cuba and their socialist system?
Yes, it's really something to behold, and that's why we encourage people to go to Cuba to see the reality for themselves, because it's hard living in this country, and I think various other countries where you've been indoctrinated with nothing but a negative perspective about this nation, it's hard to really appreciate and understand the country, its people, its culture, its mindset, without being there, without having an opportunity to dialogue, and I'm with the Cuban people, and I'm not talking about necessarily the leaders of the country, but I'm talking about the regular everyday people that you might encounter on the street. Anybody who's traveled to Cuba knows that you will be walking down the street, and if somebody perhaps hears you speaking English, they'll want to engage you, and it's not because they want something. It's not because they want you to dig in their pocket and give them some money. It's because they really are, clear on the fact that the whatever frustrations they have with the U.S., it's about the government and its policy and not the people. And their desire is to engage and to interact with the people of the United States. And it's a beautiful thing. But Cuba has so much to offer, getting back to your question, Lee, in the area, as you mentioned, of education and health. There was just a program on PBS that talked about the nature in Cuba, a lot of animals and species that are exempt, that don't exist in any other part of the world, happen to, you know, still be there in Cuba, but a lot of beautiful aspects of nature that exist. Sustainable development. There are so many things that Cuba has to offer the world, but the attitude of supporting the global community, that it's not just about us, Cuba saying it's not just about us, but it's about all of us, is something that has been very much a part of Cuba's DNA since the triumph of the revolution back in 1959. And that's why Cuba, I think, you know, was able to be on the front lines in the support against apartheid, standing up in Angola and in various parts of Africa at different times to push back against the injustice being perpetrated there, to stand up and be on the front lines when Ebola was ravaging African nations. When others were running away from that fight, Cuban doctors were running toward it and were, you know, doing all they could to try to be supportive of the need to address that horrible disease that was ravaging the country. And that has not only been the case in Africa, it's been in various nations in the world, in Central America and different parts of I was going to say Europe. I think, unfortunately, you know, often, you know, Europe, along with the U.S., is very ignorant in being able to accept support from Cuba. Not always. For example, there are doctors that are in Italy right now that are helping to fight coronavirus. So it's part of Cuba's approach. They have done this in countless countries across the globe, in China and Pakistan and Chernobyl after the nuclear accident there, in Haiti, just on and on. We have examples of Cuba stepping up and providing support because it's about all of us. And that's really been sort of the mentality of Cuba. And I think it's why it's so revered. Revered by these nations within the United Nations, revered by those who have seen, you know, just as one example, Cuba's Fidel Castro being the first to talk about climate change, you know, way back when. People have recognized and admired what Cuba has stood up for, and Cuba has continued to not to disappoint, to be there and to be on the front line in such a clear and important way. But people have to go and see and encourage people to read, you know, and be expose themselves to alternative information about Cuba other than what they get from the mainstream media in this country and this U.S. government, you know, the government of the United States as well.
You know, Dean, to give Emo more great appreciation of Cuba today, I'd just like for you, if you can, elaborate a little bit on Cuba in terms of its contribution in the field of technology and medicine and science. We know today that Cuba is in the forefront of offering medicines that can be very effective or look like fighting the coronavirus. And they have also lent themselves, you know, of many medicines that are available that U.S. citizens are denied because of the blockade. So what things Cuba has available today that they are willing to share with us, but people inside this country, its citizens, cannot benefit because of the blockade?
Yes, it's so important, Lee, that we talk about that. You know, we, IFCO, constantly talk about the blockade not just being a one-way street. This is not just, oh, poor, pitiful Cuba, that is losing out because of this policy. We here in the United States, and particularly poor people, people who don't have access to healthcare here in this country, are the ones who are also dramatically impacted by this policy. And you just mentioned a couple of different kinds of medical technology forms of medicine that the Cubans have been able to put forward that we have not been able to take advantage of because of this blockade that doesn't allow Cuba to export its medical expertise in the form of medicines and in the form of doctors and medical personnel to the United States. But there's a drug called Simivax, which is a lung cancer treatment, and it has been there's been tremendous success with the effort to curtail, the impact of lung cancer. Those who had an opportunity to see a recent film on PBS focused on Simivax, this lung cancer vaccine that is really doing tremendous things to help people. There are people who are, quote unquote, violating the law by traveling to Cuba to get this treatment because they know that it works and there's nowhere else that they're able to get this kind of assistance. There's another product called Herbaprot P, which is helps to address diabetic foot ulcers. We know the vast majority of the folk in our communities, African communities, suffer from diabetes. And know that once you start cutting, if you start cutting a toe, next thing you know, it's half the foot, and then it's the foot, and it's the ankle, it's the leg. It's not a cure to just cut. Herbaprot P is a treatment to help reverse the effects of diabetic ulcers so that cutting does not become the next natural thing that a doctor might have to do. And again, something that's not available to us because of the blockade. And then you mentioned efforts to fight this current, crisis, COVID-19, coronavirus. There is a product, interferon 2B, that is a product of Cuba that has been a really tremendous treatment that has really helped to reverse this the most dramatic cases of coronavirus, not only in Cuba. But that's why people have called from other countries have called on Cuba to help in China, in Italy, in central parts of Central America, and other nations. But Cuba is on the front lines again, providing services. It's not a cure. I want to make it clear that I'm not saying that Cuba has a cure to coronavirus, but they have a treatment that has been effective. Be put into place in Cuba under the care of doctors. There are people who are receiving this treatment, and it's having a positive impact. We don't know about these things because of this blockade. It's not just a blockade of the materials, but it's an information blockade. We're hearing less and less about it. But IFCO, along with various other groups, including many who are connected with the National Network on Cuba, a group of different organizations here in the U.S. who are supportive of improved relations with Cuba, working with friends in Canada, are putting together a campaign to really try to educate people about interferon and try to bring it to here to the United States. We know it's an uphill battle because of the blockade, but we think it's important that people know that these kinds of things exist. These kinds of support, these kinds of initiatives have been put forward by our Cuban friends. And this is yet another example of why we need to do everything we can to suspend this blockade. It's something that will benefit our friends in Cuba, but it will benefit so many people here in the United States.
Okay, if you only give us a couple of minutes, we're going to let you go because we know that you do have other appointments, and we thank you for your patience. I'm going to try to give you two quick calls or comments. These listening audience been waiting for a while. They have a comment, question, and we're going to bring them in right now. We will take caller 6057. Caller 6057. Welcome to MPH Radio. Your comment, question. Yes, caller 6057.
Thanks for having me. Revolutionary greetings, Gail. It's always an honor to talk with you. I was wondering
you,
if you could talk briefly about, Cuba's, the contrast between Cuba's response to natural disasters such as hurricanes or pandemics like COVID-19 as compared to a capitalist country like the U.S., where each region or state is basically left on their own, and there's no coordination of assistance. It seems that
right.
Cuba tends to send doctors and healthcare personnel wherever it's needed in the world, even though Cuba's resources are very scarce in and of itself, and capitalist countries tend to send soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could
mm-hmm.
talk about that a bit.
Yes,
thank you,
brother. It's always good to hear from you, brother, as well. You know, you said it so well that too often, Cuba exports doctors and capitalist countries export soldiers. In many ways, we see that happening right now, even in the fight against this pandemic. We've got soldiers, that have been dispatched as opposed to trying to find a way to get doctors out where they're needed. Cuba's approach to hurricanes is also, you're right, very tremendous example of, Cuba's trying to find ways to address problems. Their hurricane preparedness is world-renowned. When you hear of these horrific storms that happen in different parts of the world, and you hear about, the numbers of people who die, it's always amazing that that Cuba often, there may be damage. I mean, it is a natural disaster after all, but in terms of the number of people that are actually that die as a result is very limited because of all of the efforts that are put in place throughout the community. And community is very informed and engaged, and people are really encouraged to get to higher land before hurricanes approach. And so their efforts to really address these kinds of storms is another example that we can certainly learn from. And of course, we need not think about any other horrific image other than what happened during Hurricane Katrina, when so many of our family were stuck, were left, and had no other recourse but to retreat to the roofs of their houses and pray for assistance. And as we watched on television, just helpless. It was just heartbreaking. And then, of course, to have the Trump administration say no when Cuba offered to send doctors was maddening. But just one example, just another example yet of what we could learn, we could get from our Cuban friends if we were to lift this policy and have normal relations with Cuba.
Okay, Gia, this last question, then we'll let you make your final
mm-hmm.
thoughts for tonight, for this evening. We're going to bring in caller 6029. Caller 6029, your comment or question, please.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is very, very simple. One of the things, that I find ironic is that Cuba did absolutely nothing to the United States, but yet this antagonism exists, particularly on the part of the U.S. in terms of, its aggression, directed against Cuba. Now, my question is this. Philosophically, maybe your guests can explain to your public, precisely what is it philosophically that angers the U.S. in terms of relationship with Cuba, given that Cuba has done nothing at all to the U.S.?
Thank you, Carla.
It's, brother, that's the question that we get, whether no matter where I go, if I go and speak to a high school class, if we're speaking to members in the church, in a community, it's like, why? Why is this policy exist? And the only thing that I can say is, you know, the Cuba, it's been said before, Cuba is the threat of a good idea, the threat of a nation that really, truly puts people first, the threat of a nation that says, you know what, if you want to go to school, we're not going to charge you some, you know, crazy amount of money. You get to go to school for free. If you need health care, you're not the health care is available to the society free of charge, because the government, the nation has decided that that's what you know, is a priority. They prioritize these things. And I think the idea of a socialist country that is committed to putting people first is threatening to a capitalist society that sees, you know, profit as being the motivating factor. If there are too many people who are seeing the benefits, and it's not to suggest that Cuba's perfect. Cuba's got its challenges, and they'll be the first to tell you this. But the fact that it's a nation that has said we're going to prioritize our people and put our resources that are going to benefit the majority, as opposed to, you know, the individual, you know, capitalist or the individual business owner, is threatening to a society where money rules. And I think, very simply, in my opinion, that that's really what's at the crux of the matter.
Okay, Kia, we'd like to thank you for your contribution to today's program. Before we let you go, we just want you to give us a summary on what we can learn from Cuba as well as IFCO, and how can the people support your work?
I think that the important thing is to recognize that there's a lot that we can learn from Cuba, and the way that we do that is by trying to get people to Cuba to see it, experience it for themselves. And we're happy, we at IFCO, to try to talk to anybody who's interested in doing that. By reaching out to us at IFCO, we can be reached by our website, which is ifconews.org. That's I, F is in freedom, CONEWS.org. That we are also at P4P on social media. That's another way to connect with us and reach out to us. I think that the real important thing is for people to think critically, open up their minds, and have an opportunity to travel to Cuba, see it for themselves, and do what we can to expose our friends and family to Cuba, the Cuban reality, and all of the different things that our friends in Cuba are offering the world.
And Gail, is a phone number where they can reach you again, and an email?
Sure. The website is ifconews.org. The telephone number is 212-926-5757. That's 212-926-5757. And then the email, you can always, I'm happy to give my email. Mine is director, D-I-R-E-C-T-O-R, director at ifconews.org. You can also reach IFCO at ifconews.org. Either way, my hope is that people will feel free to reach out to us, and we'd love to continue the conversation about how it is we expand our relationship with our friends in Cuba.
And again, we'd like to thank you for coming forward and helping us to fill in this missing page of history. We thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And on that note, listen, audience, we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss how you can support MPH. We'll be right back. You'll listen to the voice of Missing Pages of History.
If you have Which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now, people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a...
That's right. Just a little bit more education and love for humanity will make a better world. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. Right now, in closing, we would like to share with you some information on how you can support MPH. We now return the mic over to Susie. Susie, the mic is yours.
Yes, hi. I'd like to let our audience know that our quarterly raffle ticket fundraiser drawing has been suspended, and this is to be announced at a later date. And also, we do have our continuing MPH radio program, which is on Saturdays biweekly at 1 o'clock p.m. And you can go to Blog Talk Radio, or you could either call in by calling 804. I'm sorry, go on the website to Blog Talk Radio. And also, we'd like to remind the audience that we have tentatively scheduled for August the 3rd, 2020, our MPH TV show, which will be on Comcast Channel 95 and Fios Channel 36. And this is a weekly live call-in program. And we'd also like to thank and let you know that you can support us by sending a contribution or contributions to MPH Inc. at P.O. Box 27782, and that's Richmond, Virginia, 2321, and we welcome your support. Thank you.
Yes, well, a minor correction in terms of the address. Zip code should be Richmond, Virginia, 23261. We again, we'd like to thank everybody for allowing us to come to their home this evening, and to remind you that our program is back weekly, and our next program will be August the 25th at 1 p.m. We'd like to thank our special guest today, Gail Walker, and her organization, IFCO, Pastors for Peace, and like always, the beautiful people Cuba, for their contributions toward making humanity a better. We hope that you will support this program, as stated earlier, by making a general donation, and to support organizations such as IFCO, Pastors for Peace, in terms of the work that they are doing. Like always, let's strive to go forward ever, backward ever. We see you on the 25th, and in order to make changes, we must get up and stand up for our rights. We leave you with Brother Peter.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Time. So now we see the light.
What you
we gonna stand up for?
Yeah.